Good evening and welcome, dear ones. Each of your presences is a blessing for all of us. So we come together and we enter, take our place, and we engage in a conscious exchange. That is our aim, to listen deeply, to feed, and to be fed. May our work be food not only for ourselves, but for raising the consciousness of the whole world, including ourselves. In the name of the Father Transcendent, and the Son Omnipresent, and the Holy Spirit Immanent, the Holy Living Trinity, in whom we live and move and have our being. Tonight, in remembering the teachers of our lineage, we remember the Nichols, Maurice, and Catherine. You will recall that in last week's email reference was made in the commentaries, all the commentaries on effort, and how many of them were written during World War II. Tonight, we will recall what their living conditions were like during that time. Their own personal story is quite extraordinary, one of great valuation and great personal sacrifice that accrues directly to our own well-being. Throughout the 1930s, the work group that they led in London grew substantially and progressed. Even amidst the worsening international conditions and the atmosphere that existed at that time. So fearing that London was going to be bombed at any time, crowds of their friends and work members came down to the Nichols farm every weekend and stayed with them. Apparently their accommodations were very stretched. Yet in June 1940, which was 9 months after England's declaration of war with Germany, the Nichols nevertheless celebrated the marriage of their daughter. And it was immediately afterwards that they received word that they had to vacate their farm immediately because it was being taken over by the military. They were given 24 hours notice to leave. One can only imagine what kind of turmoil that must have caused for them when they received word that they would have to leave behind possession, routine, everything that was their life and move somewhere else. Yet nonetheless, it's remarkable that Dr. Nichol himself was able to find them another accommodation. So 24 hours later, taking what they could, they left their property and moved to another place. It was said that it was a reminder to Catherine and Maurice that the work had no permanent home. And yet they had to create an ark wherever they were, to preserve the essential knowledge that had to be preserved, particularly in a very dark time. It is interesting to note that in Maurice Nichols' commentaries, he never makes mention of any of this, what their sacrifices were, what they had to do, their own personal efforts throughout this time, which were quite extraordinary. So as we talk about sex energy and its potential relationships, let us remember that the genesis of our work comes from a couple who lived an extraordinary life. Not that it was extraordinary on the stage of the world, but just by their example and what they did, how they lived, what they valued. And who would have known, certainly not them, that their work would directly accrue to us. So we honor them. We're very fortunate. A couple of notes this evening. At the beginning of the year, when we were registering for the Journey School, at that time it was possible to register for a work partner. And if you were new to the school at that time, you were placed on a waiting list. And now that 6 months period has just about passed. And if you're on that waiting list, I will contact you again to confirm your wish to have a work partner. But even if you did not initially express that wish, it is possible to be assigned a work partner for the period July to mid-December. That would be the commitment. So please send me an email by June 30th if that's something that interests you, and you will be assigned someone in early July. Tonight, we will be speaking of the sex center energy. And if you have not listened to Peter's talk on Sunday, I would encourage you to go to the recording on the church's website, because he gave a very artful summary of sex center energy and what it means for us. And it's a good umbrella to our work these next couple of weeks. So let us now consciously recollect ourselves in presence to be receptive, to be gathered, aware, present. Each of us is here at this particular time and place for a purpose. These ideas have a purpose in each of our lives. Will I be receptive to them? Will I constate what is being transmitted? What do I wish for? Why did I come here this evening? What each of us brings matters. How we come matters. How we participate matters, for that is what we are emanating to the group, and the group is emanating out into the world. With imminent trust and vulnerability, we give ourselves fully to the presence. With back upright, still and contained, residing in our own atmosphere, if you will, not entangled in the world without. So we scan our bodies, perhaps noticing and then letting go of any points of tension or constriction. We breathe in deeply in every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought us joy and hope, all affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything, and we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. In this breathing, we sense that all is unfolding and becoming, evolving in every particle of the universe and in our own being as a microcosm. I hand over complexities. I hand over plans. I hand over anxieties and the small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life that is mine. I am here. I am. I wish I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. We now enter into the time of Lectio Divina. And we receive our passage as food for being. It will be read 3 times. I came so that you may have life and have it abundantly. There is a secret in the heart of life that is not only unmoving white light, the unceasing explosion of expansive being, of proliferating life from the center. It is the fontal energy that demands to express itself everywhere and through every form. Ubiquitous power that is expressed in our own restless centrifugal living. The gospel's secret power, often hardly glimpsed by Christianity itself, is the gathering up of all our passion, our entropic centrifugal energy, our very outward thrust in vital compulsivity, secularity, and carnality into this divine energy that ever flows out from its hidden source. The possibilities are very great indeed, even unimaginable in these new and unknown worlds. It is, in fact, the miraculous. I came so that you may have life and have it abundantly. There is a secret in the heart of life that is not only unmoving white light, the unceasing explosion of expansive being, of proliferating life from the center. It is the fontal energy that demands to express itself everywhere and through every form. ubiquitous power that is expressed in our own restless centrifugal living. The gospel secret power, often hardly glimpsed by Christianity itself, is the gathering up of all our compassion, our entropic centrifugal energy, our very outward thrust and vital compulsivity, secularity, and carnality into this divine energy that ever flows out from its hidden source. The possibilities are very great indeed, even unimaginable in these new and unknown worlds. It is, in fact, the miraculous. I came so that you may have life and have it abundantly. There is a secret in the heart of life that is not only unmoving white light, the unceasing explosion of expansive being, of proliferating life from the center. It is the fontal energy that demands to express itself everywhere and through every form. Ubiquitous power that is expressed in our own restless centrifugal living. The gospel's hidden power, often hardly glimpsed by Christianity itself, is the gathering up of all our passion, our entropic centrifugal energy, our very outward thrust and vital compulsivity, secularity, and carnality into this divine energy that ever flows out from its hidden source. The possibilities are very great indeed, even unimaginable in these new and unknown worlds. It is, in fact, the miraculous. And so it is. So what came to meet you from this passage? You're invited to share your gift with all of us, and we will be enriched. Do raise your hand, and you will be called upon. Perhaps someone who hasn't spoken, or someone who hasn't spoken for quite some time. I invite you to just jump in. Susan, welcome.
Good evening. I was reminded of the that within the Benedictine rules, a vow of stability. And so that rang through for me as the, in the reading, calls us toward a gathering up of passions. And so it just had me reflect on that vow of stability in a new way that has more to do with a harnessing and channeling of that raw energy, as opposed to, I think, the way that I had experienced that, the understanding of the word stability was more of a, I guess more in line with like controlling or suppressing. And this, the language used in today's reading mattered to me, the distinctions between it.
Thank you for that, Susan. And connecting it with that contemplative lineage. Thank you. Kay, please.
The thing that caught me was the image.
Yes.
And especially after you just talked to us about the Nichols and what they went through in England, being afraid of being bombed at any moment. And the image was kind of like an explosion, but yet it was beautiful, and it wasn't damaging. And then the words in the reading, many of them kind of explosive words, you know, the centrifugality or whatever that was. And so to me, the reading and then the image as well painted a picture of what Maurice Nichol was teaching and what we have learned from him, that the work creates in us this beautiful explosion of something new. And so anyway, that's what I put together.
Ah, that's what beautiful. Thank you, Kay. Thank you. Steve, good evening.
Well, what comes to mind for me is all those energies that are World 48 type energies. You can translate it over to Teilhard's tangential energy. Mm-hmm. And then the alchemy of transforming tangential energy into radial energy. Mm-hmm. And then bringing it up to the level of the sexual energy. And then the combination of all those centers at their highest level, it's like abundant life.
Beautiful, Steve. Thank you. Someone else. Jeff, welcome.
Hi, Marianne. See the creative force of the world, and that force can either run our life and it can be out of control. We can suppress that force and be cold, or we can find that light and transform it into a never-ending light that is coming through us from Christ. And I'd have thought of the passage to where we're the light of the world, and to remove that basket and allow that light to shine.
Amen. Thank you, Jeff. And so, Bob, you will be our last. Welcome this evening.
it struck me that the quote from the scriptures, the paragraph that followed that was a beautiful, for me, a beautiful description of the abundant life. Mm-hmm. That's just what occurred to me.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, Bob, and to everyone. And now it is my delight to welcome a couple of our own time, a conscious couple who aims to know the meaning of life and to put it into practice. So I am delighted to welcome Pamela Begeman and Michael Begeman, who will speak to us of the grace and effort of sex energy. Welcome, dear ones.
Thank you, Marianne. We're going to be bouncing back and forth between Pamela and myself tonight. For those of you who are sports fans, you know that when you're listening to a sports cast nowadays, there is the play-by-play announcer, and then there's the color commentator who actually fills in all of the gaps. So I'm the play-by-play. I'll be laying out a lot of the models and we'll be pausing periodically, and Pamela's going to be filling in the gaps and correcting every error that I have laid out before you. So that's how we roll. All right. And we do it with delight. All right. I'm calling this Harmonizing Centers Part 4 because earlier this year we had Harmonizing Centers Parts 1, 2, and 3, talking about the intellectual center, the emotional center, and the moving center. And tonight we are presenting Part 1 of the Sex Center, an exploration of ideas. We have a lot of territory to cover in terms of ideas tonight, and we also wanted to leave plenty of time for questions, comments, discussion. So kind of to honor the magnitude of this topic, we are going to launch right into it and not tonight to discuss last week's homework. Next week, however, we will begin with a discussion of the homework that we end with tonight. In an email at the beginning of this year, it was written, the work on harmonizing or the spiritualization of centers is vast, and we could speak a year on just this topic. And indeed, that is so very, very true. I have to be told something at least three times before I remember it. So here's your second reminder of the evening. So Marianne gave it to us once. If you didn't see it, I also want to advertise last Sunday's sermon on sex energy that Peter gave. It was, to use Marianne's term, a very artful treatment of sex energy. Tonight we're going to be talking specifically about sex energy within one's self and what the manifestation of that looks like within oneself. Peter did a beautiful job of also addressing a lot of the tenderness of this subject for so many people in the school, in our community, and in the world. There's been untold violence and trauma and abuse of sex energy. And so I refer you strongly to Peter's treatment of some of those topics. So we begin with a reminder of what we're up to here in the Journey School. And that is throughout the natural world, especially the plant, animal, and human realms, everything that exists seeks to grow and develop. All animal species, all plant species, And it's the cosmic duty, says the work, of every human being to consciously evolve our inherent potentialities. So there is a natural evolution that takes place of all species, including Homo sapiens, takes place over millions of years. And what the work is giving us and what Christianity gives us is a model for being self-developing organisms, for evolving ourselves consciously more rapidly than nature gives us, and in ways that nature would never imagine. So when we talked about this topic at the beginning of the year, we covered the feeling brain, the body brain, and the head brain, that there's automatic and mechanical levels of manifestation for those parts of us, and that there are, through this evolutionary process, there are conscious levels that we can strive for, work toward, attain, bringing our being presence on this planet into a state of unity instead of a disjointed mess that all of us have been at different points of our lives. Taking this model and blowing it out a little bit, because the body, the moving center in the nature of the work, is divided into the instinctive, the moving, and the sex centers. And in previous classes, we've talked specifically about ways to evolve or spiritualize the instinctive center and the moving center. Tonight is the beginning of a couple of weeks focused on the sex center and sex energy itself. In this week's email, it began with a discussion of the food diagram. And that whatever we take in becomes something else. That the food that we eat, whatever we had for lunch or for dinner, comes in at a very gross or heavy form. That's what that 768 represents. And it goes through multiple transformative digestive processes and finally becomes finer and finer energies. So we're not going to talk about the details of this. There are a couple of great commentaries that were referenced. This is just laying out that whatever we take in becomes something else through either mechanical digestive processes or possibly through conscious digestive processes. So in a nutshell, because I am a really simple guy, and I like seeing things really simply, here's my food diagram, which says food comes in 768. That's the raw material. It goes through a digestive process, and it becomes this higher energy, which I'm calling, this is the good stuff. This is what we are shooting for. This is the energy that has potential for our transformation in a lot of different ways. So digestion creates these finer substances. Last night's dinner became today's conversation. Tonight's class is going to become tomorrow's attitudes, the way that you see things tomorrow. Whatever we take in goes through this digestive process, transforms, becomes something new, and conditions our future state. The sex act also, there's just one or two times tonight that I'm going to talk about the sex act as opposed to sex energy. The sex act also produces finer energy, this hydrogen 12, as they called it. Most of us, many of us, have had the experience in the sex act of feeling momentarily, perhaps, really joined with someone else, a sense of union, a sense of transcendent love, a sense perhaps of love that opens out into, that just blows out into the whole world. That is a sex act producing these finer energies. Now, the problem that we have is that that experience and that energy is short-lived and it's fleeting, right? Those of us who have had that experience that has come to us through the sex act, we also know that 10 minutes later, we might be grousing about the person who we just had that experience with. That's the nature of personality. So the name of the game is, well, how for our own transformative self-evolving process, how do we generate more of this hydrogen 12? How can it become more of a persistent energy in our system instead of something that is very fleeting? So the work teaches, and this is the second diagram that is in the email, the work teaches that there are a couple of other digestive octaves that can take place. The blue bubbles here represent the digestion, the conscious digestion of air that we take in. And if that air, and I'm talking about literal air that we're breathing in and out right now, if that goes through a conscious digestive process, that also produces some of this finer energy, the hydrogen 12. And similarly, the third food that the work teaches us that we take in is the food of impressions. What do we read? What do we watch? What do we, you know, on TV? What do we watch on YouTube? What do we watch on Instagram? What do we watch on, you know, on the browsers that we're, you know, flipping through? All of these are impressions. And that there are also conscious ways of taking in those impressions, which also go through a digestive process and generate these higher energies. So the question is, well, how? When you do conscious work on yourself, you generate more of this good stuff, i.e. this transformational energy, right? Conscious work, more good stuff. That's the name of the game here in the work. The more I work on myself consciously, the more higher energy is generated and accumulated in me and in you. And this is the energy of transformation. This is the thing that has us become something new, what Nickel called the new man, what Gurdjieff calls building second body or Kesgen body. These are the mechanisms by which this new manifestation of me still on planet Earth takes place. So how do we go about this? What are some of the tools? And this is the Cliff's Note versions of all of this. So the work gives us, for the transformation of impressions, a few tools. The first, conscious shock. So we talked about this in detail in the class last year. This is taking impressions in a new way, using work tools to teach us to take things in a new way, so that when these impressions come in, when you're sitting in a meeting, when you're having a conversation with somebody, when this, you know, whatever the irritant is that strikes our personality, the lights turn on and we're able to transform that energy instead of just returning the serve. The work gives us something else called the second conscious shock. This is the transformation, the actual transformation of negative energy. It is the almost seemingly impossible injunction that Jesus gave us when he said, pray for those who spitefully use you. So it's one thing to just kind of not return the volley when somebody, you know, sends a hard ball your way. It's something else when you are afflicted by somebody or something to actually pray for them. This is the transformation of negative emotion. We have this negative emotion, and instead of just holding it, which is part of what would come with the first conscious shock, we're actually using that negative emotion, that negative energy, as food for our own transformation. And the digestive process, in this case, is prayer. The work gives us a tool called self-remembering. In any moment during the day, remembering God's presence in my life and my presence in God's life. It's not just me and the world. It is me and the world and God. Instead of it's just being first and second force, we're building a triad where God is involved in all of the aspects of our life. And lastly, I mean, there's a dozens of these, but the last one that I'm going to talk about tonight is Byron Katie's work. An immensely practical toolkit for transforming impressions, for transforming the beliefs, for transforming the way that we take in and deal with the impressions of life, the impressions of other people in our lives, the impressions of circumstances in our lives. So there's a whole teaching behind Byron Katie's work on our call tonight. Beverly is kind of our resident Byron Katie expert. So she's a good go-to person for this topic. Transforming breath. So there are many, many different kinds of breathwork techniques, especially that come to us through Eastern traditions. But in our own tradition here in the Journey School, Christine O'Brien has been with us a number of times. She's talked about the digestion or the transformation of trauma in our lives. Much of what she had to talk about was using breath, using a tool of the breath to discharge energy, to transform energy, to stimulate our nervous system in new ways. It's an immensely practical tool for using our breath consciously to transform our emotional and energetic state. I use her techniques weekly driving on the interstate. You can do it without sacrificing your safety. So, all of these produce more of this good stuff, these higher energies, these higher hydrogens within us, this transformational energy. Thomas Keating in The Mystery of Christ gave us the following quotation. The power of the stars is nothing, nothing compared to the energy of a person whose will has been freed from the false self system, and that is the density of being, sleep, and habit. Do we believe that? I mean, try it on. I'm just, what if, just feel into this, what if the power of the stars is nothing compared to the energy of a person whose will has been freed from all of this goop that we have accumulated through life? That is our Christified self, right then and there. We're going to take a pause here. I talked about all these models, and then there's always the question for me, which is, so what does this have to do with anything, right? It's a fair question, and I ask it on your behalf. So now that I've created the first little mess, I'm going to turn it over to Pamela to do cleanup work.
He's brilliant at creating models, isn't he? I'm so grateful for that. It's not my gift. But before we say, well, so what? We've taken in a lot of information. So let's just check in with ourselves. Is there sort of a density of energy around your head? Is there any tension building up with all this information? This is a chance to redistribute any energy within oneself, to remember and recenter, to connect with breath, to do all those things Michael just talked about, right here. Creating energy right here, creating fine energy, and using the container of the community to magnify that energy. To create an arc, to gather it up. So when Michael and I were talking about this topic, he kept really struggling with, well, why do we even have to talk about the food diagrams? And it matters because it's an illustration that we have choice, we have agency. We can choose our food, the literal, the breath, the impressions. So that whole model is a way of saying it's worth it to choose. And you could say that, and Nichols says it somewhere, that all of the work is a study of energies, and it's a practice of energies. It's a practice of studying, where do we lose energy? Where do we leak force? Where do we feed the moon? Where do I gain energy? What feeds my soul? What enlivens my being? Do I know the difference? Can I tell the difference? It's the practice of gathering our attention, which Jacob Needleman calls the power of the soul. Gathered attention is the power of the soul. That's a lot of power. It's the kind of power Michael was just asking us, do we really believe that that could come through us? So we could simplify the work into a study and a practice of energies, because it does make a difference. It makes a difference to our own life experience, to our own capacity to not only cope, but to thrive, to flourish, to live that abundant life, to be that abundant witness of God's presence in this world in a human form. It's life force. So what are we doing with it? It's that important. Something that Michael didn't mention, but we often speak of buffers in the work. And we don't ever go directly at buffers. They're usually too hidden from us. But through all the various work that we do, they begin to dissolve and to soften. And what happens when they do? It releases energy. Some of that energy within us can flow. And we've talked about the issues are in the tissues. We acquire a lot of armoring in the body, a lot of holding, a lot of protecting. And I know in my relationship with Michael, that's something he really helped me with. I was raised by perfectionist parents. I had a lot of armoring. And through the container of unconditional love in our relationship, through the container of a loving sexual relationship, a lot of that armoring just let go. And my experience of life is completely different. So that work that we have been doing this year on the body, a lot of the exercise that Christine O'Brien gave us, all of these are helping to dissolve that armoring and to allow that energy to flow. There's a phrase in the email, the fire of a unified inner being, the fire of a unified inner being. And once that power is released, there's an incredible possibility. It says one can change one's cosmos. What does that mean? It means I live in a whole different world. I live in a different universe. I see everything differently. practical day-to-day experience of life is wholly different. Differently rooted, differently expressed, differently exchanged. So one of the things that Nichol says, and I didn't get this the first time around, he talks about, and it was in today's email, that one of the aims of the work is to evolve sex center from its connection to instinctive center, so that it evolves to the feeding of and becoming part of higher emotional center. Very interesting, serving a totally different purpose, feeding in a totally different way. And that's what we do in the school. Everything we do is already in service to that. But there is an actual repurposing of that energy from the instinctive center to higher emotional center. A whole different feeding and a whole different being fed, because there's a reciprocity in how we then are fed that energy through higher centers. We can feel it, we can hear it, we can live it. We'll discuss more of that next week, because that's a big topic. But Cynthia Bergeau says it in a different way, which is maybe more direct and helpful. In her book, Eye of the Heart, she says, Eros energy evolves to agapic energy. And Michael's going to share this on screen. Eros energy can evolve through our conscious labors into agapic energy. And she creates a little, whatever that is.
Formula.
What is that? Formula. Thank you. Where A is agape, E is eros, and K is kenosis, or she calls it a kenotically surrendered heart. So we come into this world as Eros, but through the practices of surrendering, which she calls radical non-clinging, Through these practices, we evolve this God-given energy into agapic love, agapic energy, divine energy. And that is the power of the stars. I think that's a brilliant formula. And it actually helps me understand the process a little bit more. I can look back on my own trajectory. Peter mentioned that there are people that have more intense wavelengths of sexual energy and ones that have longer wavelengths. And I was one of those people with more intense wavelengths and didn't know how to use that energy and had no teaching or context that culture or parenting gave me. And so that energy just went completely awry for the first 3 decades of my life. Until I found the spiritual journey and centering prayer and the tools that we practice. And now that energy is completely in service to something else. And it's a delight in a different way. And the really good news is we don't have to get really too wrapped up into what to do or what to know any differently than what we're already doing, because all of the practices are in service to this. So to the extent that these models might pull you into believing that this is a really complex, advanced topic, it's not. We're just going to keep doing the same things we've been doing in service to waking up, in service to the whole. So let's stop there and see if you have any questions or comments. What is this inspired in you? Hi, I don't know your name. It says owner.
Hi, my name is Marky Bowles, and I have a Zoom account, and I don't know how to get that owner off yet, but I'm going to do that eventually. Anyway, so I don't know where this information is leading me. All I know is I feel very receptive to it. It feels like this, you know, finally kind of a full circle thing, like it's an opportunity to really open up this area of my life that's been more shut down. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really looking forward to learning more about this. But I had read a different Cynthia Bourgeau book about Mary Magdalene. Mm-hmm. And she talked about Jesus and Mary having that, you know, A equals E, K, you know, Eros and Kenosis, the emptying of yourself and the pure sexual energy. And anyway, it's just on a higher level. So I just wanted to mention that as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Howard.
So this is, of course, an extremely deep topic. Excuse me, it's choking me up even to start to talk about it. But it is something that I've struggled with forever. I mean, for the longest time. And the Eros part of it, the thing you mentioned earlier about the non-clingy, and just so many things coming kind of together as you and Michael are presenting this for me. And, you know, the other part of it is just the work done over all these years that I'm kind of forgetting where I was going with that. That goes, like the that has just been incredibly useful in, you know, so many respects for me. And the just, I say, kind of listening to what you guys are talking about is really just really landing for me. It's been a very useful subject. Peter's talk Sunday too was really, really good to hear. And like you both said, he, I guess, I can't remember, Marianne and Michael, and I think you, but the energy portion of it as well, what that can do when brought to feeding that higher emotional center. Mm-hmm. I've experienced that even. And so I know that's a possibility, and just really some incredibly good information around it all, for sure.
Thank you, Howard. Christine.
Hello.
Hi.
Just as y'all are talking, I was thinking about how so much of this has occurred in my centering prayer practice or my sitting in silence practice. And I just wanted to share briefly about that, because I think it's possible for everyone. And that little formula, A equals EK. I think when I came to prayer practice, it was very much an Eros kind of a thing for Jesus, maybe even for Mother Mary. And it very much felt like the love that we might have for another person on this earth. But as I sat more and more and surrendered more and more, there came a point where there was an experience of something that I didn't know at first what it was. It was so powerful. And honestly, it scared me to death. But also I want to say, had it not been for a lot of work that I had done around trauma, that I wouldn't have been able to stay present with that power. Mm. And when I was able to stay present with the power, I realized, like, oh my gosh, this is that love, that agape love of God. And it did feel like it was descending upon me. Mm-hmm. And yet now I know too that it was radiating out of me. It is just this complete saturation. And I realized that there's no escaping this. Like, this is what we're all living in and living from. And I feel and see that agape love constantly changing my life, mm-hmm. and moving me in directions where the little self Christine would never go in. But it's just so loving that I just can't not go where it's moving me.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's irresistible. It's irresistible. Yeah, thank you, Christine. David.
Good evening.
Hi.
I've come to see myself as a very relational person, to the extent that, everything about my experience is about relationship to not just to people, but to experiences, to events, to objects, to the natural world. And that's where I get to do my work. And to, harvest the fruit of that work that can be, through the self-emptying practices that we have been blessed with, to have the possibility of experiencing this more agapic kind of love. And as I'm sitting with that equation, A equals EK, I realized that, the experience of those kind of moments, of that kind of love, that it's like I can't find the Eros in it because it's so different than the way I have experienced Eros before. Hmm. And it's like, oh, is that really there? Is that what it, that's it in its more pure, more transformed form. Okay. Yeah. I'll take more of that.
Amen. We'll take Jack or Jackie next, but I just want to I appreciate these sharings because it helps all of us hear that this is real, that it's possible, that it's loving, that it's irresistible. It may look a little differently for each of us, and it comes at different times in different ways. I haven't had Christine's experiences. I haven't had anything cosmic or special at all. It's just been a long, slow turn. But it's all been good. So it's good to just sort of color in the details from different angles with our own experiences. Jack or Jackie, we'll take one more and then we'll have Jack. Michael come back.
It's Jack. Hi, Pamela and Michael.
Hi.
So the sex energy is something that, I mean, I've read through the commentaries and I always got a relief when Nicole say, well, we'll talk about the sex center later or something like that. I go, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. But it's been presented a really sweet way, not only tonight, but at the email this morning. And I reflected on our monthly exercise in kneeling in nature and looking at objects and looking for a glow or an aura around them, that they're more than just they are. And I struck out sunrise. And I looked at a leaf, didn't get it. I was trying to force this thing. But I walked down the street towards the top of the hill overlooking Lake Travis and 620. And instead of staying on the street, I went into the right-of-way and walked right to the edge. And I'm walking towards the edge and I see a patch of dirt about the size of both my feet, just dirt, caliche, with grass around it. And I saw there was like it was glowing, that patch of dirt. I get up there, I put my feet in it. I feel the glow of the energy and I stand up, I look up and there's a hot air balloon that has just taken off. And I could see in the early hours, the fire, and I thought of the iron filings in the retort and how, you know, how the energy and heat was rising this balloon higher and lighter and lighter. And it was such a beautiful moment of recognizing we get these moments, or I get them when I do really practice consciousness, directed attention, and obedience and love for the work. And it was just, you know, I almost didn't want to, you know, these are these moments maybe when it's best you don't share them. Mm. Well, dang it, I shared it. But at the same time, it was just a beautiful moment. Such a reality of what it is we're studying these 2 weeks.
That's right. That we're even capable of receiving them, of noticing a patch of dirt that's iridescent.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Jack. Michael, who's now moved behind me in the same room. Because our internet's kind of having trouble with two of us.
Indeed, it is. It kicked me off a few minutes ago. I thought I'd better move. All right. So back to the play-by-play. So the model that the work gives us is that sex energy is transformed into transformational energy of one type or another. So this is a model that Gurdjieff came up with 100 years ago. This is 1920s. And 100 years have passed. There is a different model that I want to spend a couple of minutes on tonight. It might be more useful for some of us. And this is a model that comes from Michael Washburn. And there's a very interesting book that he wrote called embodied spirituality in a sacred world. And Michael Washburn is a transpersonal psychologist. He was a student of and has been evolving the work of Ken Wilber, if you know Ken Wilber. So this is in that same lineage. The model is that there is this thing called the dynamic ground, which I think of as just raw life energy. It's just that force of life energy. And in the first 5 years or so of our life, we are one with that life energy, with the dynamic ground. That is all that we are. And our complete expression is just that. It's just like life presenting itself through our cellular structure in our being. During these first 5 years, we, by golly, we develop an ego. We develop a sense of self, our separate self sense. And as that happens in this model, the dynamic ground, the expression of the dynamic ground in us becomes repressed, and it is replaced by our personal egoic self. And that's how we go through life until we hit puberty. And then all of a sudden, wham. So puberty happens, we move into adolescence. I mean, puberty is the most radical, rapid change of personality and physiology that ever happens to a human being, and it happened to all of us. What Washburn says is that during that time, it breaks something open in us, and the dynamic ground, this life force, comes surging back into us, and it expresses itself as libido, or perhaps libido is the thing that encompasses this life force at that point in our life. And we all go crazy, right? You know, we all become these, you know, sex-crazed teenagers. And that continues on into early adulthood, middle adulthood, late, you know, it all depends on the person, right? But it continues on for a while. And at some point, our new sense of self as an adult stabilizes, usually around the age of 30-ish, and that new sense of self crystallizes, and in that crystallization, the dynamic ground becomes repressed again. Think of it as a transformative force. It gets repressed again, and we then live out our life with our new identity. Period. Most people make it the whole way to death with no further transformation. This is not saying that sex energy is completely repressed. This is saying that the dynamic ground is completely repressed. Our sexual function goes on to varying degrees as we age out. Then something can happen, and is completely, this is the optional step for human development. And that is what the work calls conscious labors. It's the optional expression of the dynamic ground. Washburn calls it the de-repression of self, de-repression in service of transcendence. Friends, this is the transformative work that we're all engaged in. It's why if we didn't have this urge, we wouldn't be sitting here on Thursday nights talking about these ideas in the Journey School. This is the energy that rises up in us. Well, there's something in us that says, is this all there is? And if the answer is, I wonder what else there is, in a big way, as opposed to trying to go back and relive my youth, then we embark on the transformational journey, the spiritual journey. And what Washburn says is this de-repression of self in service of transcendence is us intentionally working against the programs that have been laid down in us, our personality traits, working against the buffers that Pamela mentioned, and allowing the God energy to come back into our life and to animate us. And then the next phase is what he calls regeneration in spirit. This is the new life. The new life that we all get to live, hopefully, in this body. So I just offer this because it's a different model of, it's not sex energy turning into transformational energy. What he's saying is that, no, there's this life energy that manifests as sex at one part of our life and potentially as the thing that drives our transformation at another point of our life. All right. Earlier this year, we talked about this model. This was developed by Ken Wilber and Thomas Keating. So this is another way of looking at things. What they say is that the evolution of consciousness of humanity and of us as individuals goes through this stage, through the Eurobric, Typhonic, Mythic Membership, Mental Egoic, and Unitive stages. Eurobric is a kind of a reptilian stage, Typhonic is childhood stage, Mythic Membership is pretty much where our entire society is. So there is a prime orientation of one's self during these various phases of our evolution of consciousness. During the Eurobric stage, we are looking at what's good for survival. Typhonic, what's good for me? Mythic Membership, what's good for my group? Mental Egoic, what's good for the greater us? And Unitive, just what's good with a capital G? What is the good? Now, I drew a green line across here because underneath the green line, as I've said, that is lower levels of consciousness, and it kind of peaks with Mythic Membership where we see ourselves, where I see us as a society and the world, frankly. Above the green line are these optional levels of consciousness. They do not happen mechanically like the other ones do. They're things that with work on oneself, we move into. And so what does sex energy look like in these different phases? Well, in the what's good for survival, it's simply reproduction. Sex energy is just genetic reproduction, keeping the species going. If I'm looking at what's good for me, sex energy manifests as pleasure, getting what I want. If I look at what's good for my group, that looks like family or group or national expansion and power. So the thing that drives nationalism, the thing that drives war, the thing that drives expansion, early days of the country, the westward expansion, that was sexual energy at work. Expanding our territories, expanding our dogmas, that is the power of sex energy being put to use for some things. Above the green line, what's good for the greater us, this moves us, that this moves sex energy expression into creativity, beauty, music, innovation, things that serve the greater good. And the primary orientation of what's good is self-transcendence, actual union and unity with others. So tonight, first of all, a quote from Bennett. This is from his book, Sex, on page 21. And he says, we should never confuse sex with love. They are quite different things. The energy of love, the unitive energy, stands above that of sex, which is the creative energy. And it is, and you note from the previous diagram, that creative energy is one of the higher expressions of sex energy. Love is beyond. So long as we remain attached to our own worth, our self-referential worth, love cannot enter. So this week's exercise, we're about to move into a slide that talks about some of the very specific ways that sex energy manifests below the green line, the way that it manifests mechanically in our lives. And then next week's focus is, of course, what we all want to get to, which is how sex energy manifests in its evolved forms and this and what is possible for all of us. So before I take a look at the slide of how these things manifest, I wanted to see if there are any questions about those models right quick. Hearing none, here we go. I would wait you out if we weren't running out of time. All right. So the lower expressions of sex energy below that green line. Now, the reason I want you to pay attention to these, first of all, self-knowledge, number one. Number two, understanding of what makes the world go around. Number three, part of our energy is saying, part of our homework is, can we see any of these at work in us? So, manifestations of sex energy, fantasy, idle fantasy, not just sexual thoughts. When we sit around thinking, again, for the 100th time, I wish, if only, Non-creative use of imagination. Now, some of you may have remembered a question that Lisa Brown asked a few months ago about imagination. And there are imagination manifests itself in a couple of ways. One is imagining, again, for the 50th time, what I'm going to do with all that money if I win the lottery or something else. But there are creative uses of imagination. And in fact, all of the faculties that we are given are a gift from God. I remember somebody asking Bernadette Roberts about imagination once, and she said, without imagination, how could we imagine God? God gave us imagination as a faculty so that we can imagine what is beyond our senses. Sex energy is used in domination of others, in destructive violence, the opposite of creativity, war, perversion, fundamentalism, some pathologies that lead to self-destruction. Overactivity, restlessness, identification with persons and things, all of the things that drive so much of our pop culture. Achievement, not for the sake of the greater good, but for the sake of the self or personality. Achievement for the sake of pride and vanity, personal success, as opposed to working for fulfilling genuine creative impulse. Sex energy manifests as a disturbance of the instinctive functions. It shows up as greed, as gluttony, as addictions. And in co-opting the emotional center, especially through states of excitement or irritability. There are some additional things that are in this week's email, specifically about how the sex center, how the energy of the sex center, that is how sex energy is co-opted by the intellectual center, the emotional center, and the moving center beyond the things that are on this slide. So refer back to the email for additional examples of the way that sex energy just shows up in our mechanical lives. All of these things probably have shown up in all of our lives at one point or another. This is not about being good or bad. We were born into the state of consciousness that we got. We were born, we've been working through the aerobic, the typhonic, the mythic membership levels of consciousness. They give us this stuff. So the inscription over the door at the Temple of Delphi says, know thyself. It's one of the first injunctions of the work. Here's a lens to see how sex energy, some of the ways that sex energy manifests. All right. A last moment for questions or comments before we open up the homework. Hey, Lisa.
I've got a bad connection here, so I'm not showing the video to be able to connect well.
That's okay.
This is a curiosity of mine as I watch my mother age, and I also have watched other people age, and there's a similarity with it. And the question is it possible as you age, if you may have not done a lot of work on yourself, that you can go back into that young teenager phase and have this libido energy come up, not wanting to act on an act, a sex act, but craving this attention from the opposite sex? And it's just, it's an energy that my mother seems to be stuck in. And I've talked to other friends of mine, and it's that she is so craving attention from men that it just, you know, tonight's been interesting. It's made me ponder, can you kind of, you know, go back in?
So this, all I can do is speculate, Lisa. I don't know. So that's the first thing. I don't know. Check back in 20 years and I might have another answer for you. However, that going back could be the only expression of the desire for union that your mother has ever known.
Interesting.
So what is before her, the next step that is before her, is true union with God. It is the dissolution of the self, and all that is going to be left, it's going to drop away, and all there is going to be union with the divine. Mm-hmm. Now, if we don't know that, there is probably something in us, speculation, that is longing for, searching for, yearning for that union. But if the only thing that you have ever known that represents that union is union with another, maybe that's why you go there. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's why. I mean, I think that's a good point. And that makes sense. Because she's also going through a period now, she'll be 86 in a few weeks. And now she is, she's reliving all of the bad things that she's done in her life. You know, and I know that's in preparation, but my prayer is that she doesn't get stuck, you know, in that spot and not be able to get some freedom from it. But that's useful. That's helpful, Michael. I appreciate it.
Well, and it's also useful for her to go through her life review. You know, she's going through purgatory before death, which is
right.
A handy thing. We get to do it not so intensely if we spread it out over a couple of decades.
Right.
Yep. All right. A quick peek at the homework, and then we'll take it back to Marianne. So using the work tool of specific and non-judgmental self-observation, okay? Specific and non-judgmental. How is sex energy being co-opted, misused, leaking, or expressed by the other centers? So the things I mentioned on the slide that you just saw, the things that are in the homework. Is there work you see for yourself related to sex energy? So just some of you have spent decades already doing self-observation. This may not, you know, so the first thing may not be a useful aim. So then the question is, well, what work do you see for yourself as it relates to sex energy? And again, the third time, so you don't forget. What? Lisa, you're not muted. Watch Peter's talk from last Sunday. All right. So blessings to you all, and Marianne, please.
Thank you, Michael and Pamela both. Thank you. So we'll close our evening in prayer, the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.